From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, a conversation with Bernie Sanders, the senator from Vermont, running for the presidency as a Democrat. Today, Senator Bernie Sanders may need no introduction.
Who are you guys here to see? Who feels a burn?
But he might have needed one about 4 years ago when he decided to challenge Hillary Clinton's second presidential bid.
And it is fair to say, Senator, that in your definition as you being the self-proclaimed gatekeeper for progressivism, I don't know anyone else who fits that definition.
Until then, Bernie Sanders was a relatively unknown independent senator from Vermont with some very progressive ideas.
We need to develop a political movement which once again is prepared to take on and defeat a ruling class whose greed is destroying our nation.
Born in Brooklyn, New York, the son of an immigrant, at 39 years old, Bernie Sanders, who called himself a socialist, became the mayor of Burlington, Vermont in 1981.
Nobody ever called him Mr. Mayor. He was always just plain Bernie. A socialist from Brooklyn who turned conservative Burlington upside down.
He won the election against the Democratic incumbent running as an independent by just 10 votes.
If I were the president of the largest bank in Burlington, I'd be real nervous about you.
Well, they may be. They may be. But I think they are.
In 1990, Bernie Sanders was elected to the U.S. House of Representatives.
As we turn now to Vermont, where voters have elected Bernie Sanders to become the country's first self-described socialist elected to the U.S. Senate.
Finally, in 2006, he was elected to the Senate, always as an independent. So it's no surprise that many political analysts didn't believe Bernie Sanders' challenge to Hillary Clinton in the 2016 presidential elections would go anywhere. Turns out it did.
Last month, Hillary Clinton had a 20-point lead nationally over Bernie Sanders. Tonight, Sanders has cut Clinton's lead to 7.
Bernie Sanders, that Democratic socialist senator from Vermont, now has nearly double the support over the candidate who many assumed would glide right into this nomination.
Sanders won about 46% of the pledged delegates.
And you know why we're here? Because we feel the burn!
But Sanders didn't do so well in 2016 with Latino voters. He lost the primaries in 10 of 11 states with a sizable Latino population. Still, the Sanders campaign became a movement. And even after he lost the delegate count, some of his followers refused to endorse Hillary Clinton. Their message was Bernie or bust.
Can I just say, to the Bernie or bust people, you're being ridiculous.
This election cycle, it's a very different story.
Our new poll with the Washington Post shows a clear top tier pulling away for now from the rest of the pack. Joe Biden still on top with 27%, Bernie Sanders with 19, and a rising Elizabeth Warren right behind him with 17. The three of them get almost triple the support of all the other candidates combined.
Senator Sanders is now one of the front runners in a field of candidates that remains quite crowded. And this time, Sanders isn't the only candidate with progressive policy proposals.
If I am the leader, I will work towards the ideal of health insurance, health coverage being a right for all Americans.
So yes, I'm with Bernie on Medicare for All, and let me tell you why. I spent a big chunk of my life studying why families go broke. And one of the number one reasons is the cost of health care, medical bills.
I think Medicare for All is one of the possible paths. The goal should be universal, guaranteed, high-quality health care.
The senator is a self-proclaimed socialist. Once a taboo term, socialism has become a bit of a buzzword amongst young Democratic rising stars like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
You know, just as there's all of this fear-mongering that government is going to take over every corporation and government is going to take over every business or every form of production, we should be scared right now because corporations have taken over our government.
Sanders has also become something of a favorite among Latino voters. He's number two, running behind Vice President Joe Biden. So today, we sit down with the senator who started a political revolution within the Democratic Party. We'll talk about his decision to run for the presidency again, growing up in a working-class family, and his ideas about immigration. Bernie Sanders, welcome to Latino USA.
Thank you. Thank you.
So how are you doing, Senator?
I am doing well. It's long days on the campaign trail, and most of the time it's fun.
I don't know. Honestly, Senator, I don't know why you would want to do this. I'm just like this is so exhausting.
See, if I told you the truth.
And you better tell me the truth.
I guess I have 7 grandchildren. I want them to be able to grow up in a country which is a good country and a just country and a country which is not ravaged by climate change and so forth and so on. That's why I'm running. That's the simple truth of it.
So tell me about the kids, like your grandkids, because I don't have an image of Bernie.
Oh, he's a doting grandfather.
Ooh, tell
doting,
me more.
A doting.
What does that look like?
Well, I've got 4 kids, one of them in New Hampshire, one of them now in Arizona, 2 in Burlington, Vermont, and I got 7 grandchildren, 3 in New Hampshire, 4 in Vermont. And what can I tell you? They are the most beautiful grandchildren in the entire world.
Never heard that
I mean, that's
before.
Just the fact. And, you know, I don't want to argue the point, but they are.
Not like
they're
you're
much above average. But
what about them brings you joy? I mean, you had 4
I'll
kids.
Tell you, I mean, don't tell anybody, but I kind of like children more than adults. But don't tell anybody that, all right? You won't say I said that.
I won't say
probably that. Cost me some votes, but the children don't vote. But, kids are, what I like about them is that they're honest. When they get involved in things, they do it with all of their energy. You know, they play and they relate to each other and everything is a big deal. And they haven't learned to be phonies and, it's kind of nice.
So there's a lot of phonies in your line of work. And so now I'm seeing this.
I would say that is a major understatement.
But I'm seeing the kind of Bernie, the genuine Bernie, who's talking about his grandkids. And I'm like, I can see that now. So why does that Bernie want to be hanging out and playing a game where you know that there's a lot of this, politicians?
Well, I'll tell you why. My wife and I thought long and hard about whether we should run or not. And you on Mondays we said yes, and Tuesdays we said no, and Wednesday yes, and Thursday no. And we knew, we're not children, and we knew exactly what we get into in terms of the kind of attacks, not just against me, against my family, all of the ugliness and lunacy that's out there. But we decided to do it for 2 reasons. Number one, it is absolutely imperative that we defeat the most dangerous president maybe in the history of the United States, somebody who is a racist, a sexist, a homophobe, a xenophobe, a religious bigot, among other things, and who's a pathological liar. So this guy cannot be allowed to be reelected. And I have concluded, along with some other people, that in fact we are the strongest campaign to defeat Donald Trump. Can other people defeat Donald Trump? I think so. But I think actually we go into this thing as maybe the strongest candidate. So that's number one. And number two, the other reason for running is that I think the time is long overdue, and this goes beyond Donald Trump, to transform our economy and our government and create a nation, a government that works for all of us and not just wealthy, powerful, special interest. So you got massive income and wealth inequality. You got millions of people who are struggling. You got 87 million people don't have any health care. You got all kinds of young people can't afford to go to college or are leaving school deeply in debt. You got all kinds of sexism and racism and a criminal justice system which is broken, an immigration system which is broken. And then, on top of all that, if that's not enough, you got the global crisis of climate change, which the scientists tell us if we don't turn this around, you ain't gonna have much of a planet left for our kids and our grandchildren. Other than that, we're doing pretty good. And that's why I'm running, because I think you got to address those issues.
I was one of those people who, when Donald Trump announced, I said, he could do this.
Did you?
Oh, yes.
You were one of the few.
Yeah, and people kind of dismissed me.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, no, he could do this because being a Mexican immigrant out in the United States of America and just kind of hearing, you know, because this kind of anti-immigrant thing, which is what he's running on,
yes.
obviously,
yep.
it didn't just start yesterday,
right?
I mean, it's been around for a long time. It's been really seeping into our psyche for the last 50 years, certainly. But I want to ask you then, Senator, how do you think that this happened, that he in fact did get elected?
I will tell you why. Now, I may be wrong, but I'll give you my best shot. I think it's, you know, I'm going to upset a lot of your listeners right now, but I will say that I think it's not so much that Trump won, but the Democrats lost.
Mm.
And by that, I mean the Democratic Party over a period of years has evolved into a West Coast party, into a East Coast party, a party of the upper middle class, a party which has become very dependent on the wealthy and large corporations for campaign contributions. And in the midst of all of that, they forgot what FDR was about, what even Truman was about, and that is being a party of the working class of this country, having the courage to stand up for working people and take on big money interests. So what has happened is that year after year, you see in America, you see in the Midwest, people working longer hours for lower wages. You are seeing massively increased income and wealth inequality. So workers all over this country, they're working two or three jobs, and then they see three people on top own more wealth than the bottom half of American society. You got people out there can't afford childcare. They can't afford to send their kids to college. They can't afford healthcare. They're paying 50% of their incomes in housing. And you know what they're saying, Maria? They're saying, who cares about me? Who cares about me? And then Trump comes along and says, you know what? I'm listening to you. And you know what the cause of your problem is? I will tell you. It's the immigrants. Or it's the gays. Or it's the
Muslims.
The Muslims.
Mexicans.
Or whatever they go, the Mexicans, whoever it is. And that is what demagogues always do. I mean, Trump didn't invent this political playbook. It went on in Europe. It goes all over the world. When people have problems and they're angry and they're upset, you take that anger and you deflect it by blaming some minority group for all of their problems. It's history. That's what always happens. And to be honest with you, what we are trying to do in this campaign is two things. Is number one, tell those working people that we understand they can't afford healthcare, that they can't afford to send their kids to college, that they're making $10 an hour and they can't afford to live on that. And we are going to work with them to create a decent standard of living for all of our people and not just protect the interests of the 1%. Number two, what our campaign is about is exactly the opposite of Trump. He wants to divide us up. What is really ugly about Trump and what really I detest is not just his views on healthcare and he wanted to throw, you know, 32 million people off of healthcare. Not only his tax breaks for billionaires, not only his refusal to acknowledge the reality of climate change, but what is uniquely ugly about him is his desire to divide us up, which is so un-American, so much against everything that I grew up believing.
Coming up on Latino USA, we continue our conversation with Senator and presidential candidate Bernie Sanders, and we hear his pitch for the Latino voter.
Because most Latinos in this country are part of the working class of this nation. And you're looking at a candidate who has fought hard to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour.
Stay with us. No te vayas.
When Bethany saw someone that looked a lot like her friend's boyfriend on the dating app Hinge,
I was like, oh my God, did something happen?
This week, NPR's Invisibilia dives into the tricky business of sorting the real from the fake.
Hey, we're back, and we're going to continue our conversation now with Senator Bernie Sanders. He's a candidate for the Democratic presidential nomination. So let's talk a little bit about Bernie growing up. And I want to get to the fact that you were in Chicago when I was in Chicago, because I grew up in Chicago on the South Side in Hyde Park.
Did you?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We were neighbors.
We were kind of neighbors in an interesting time, right?
Yep.
In Chicago. But tell me about, just briefly, your family does come from Poland. Your father?
My father came from
Poland. Is an immigrant from what is now Poland.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about what you remember as that kid?
Oh, yeah. One tries to think about, I'm sure you do, everybody does, what are the factors when we were kids that shape us to who we are today, right? And who the hell knows? I don't know. But I think there are two factors that I think help shape me. Number one, I grew up in a working class home. My father worked very, very hard, but he never made a whole lot of money. And we lived in a rent-controlled 3.5-room apartment in Brooklyn, New York. That's where I grew up.
And what did your dad do?
He was a paint salesman, sold paint. Worked for a company, went out every day, and he sold paint. And he made a living, but he never made a lot of money. And my mother had dreams of someday owning her own home, kind of the American dream. She died young and never achieved that dream. So the pressure of not having a lot of money, the stress on our family of not having a lot of money, is something that had a profound impact on me as a child and something that has carried with me and shaped my political views.
And I'm going to actually stop you. Can you tell me, for you back then, when you say as a kid who didn't have money, what did that look like?
I'll tell you what it looked like. It looked like that you went out and sometimes you wore your brother's coat because the family couldn't afford to buy you a new coat. It meant that I was a ball player. I played a lot of ball. So some kids would get fancy sneakers. We got the cheapest sneakers. Some kids get really nice baseball gloves. We got kind of low-end baseball gloves. It means that I remember like it was yesterday. Leather jackets were in style when I was a kid.
Always in New York City.
And I desperately wanted a damn leather jacket with a fur collar on it. You know, one of those phony
like
fur collars?
Bomber kind of look.
That's right. That's exactly. And this is a true story. My mother said, Bernie, okay, you want to do this. We went to 10 different stores in Brooklyn. We got on the train. We went to Manhattan to look for the cheapest leather jacket that we can. And the irony of it is we ended up buying it where we started, back in Brooklyn. But, you know, I remember what it means is being yelled at by my mother because she said, go out. You got to go out and here's a list of things you got to buy at the grocery store. And I made a mistake. I went to the wrong grocery store. And I paid more than I should have. It was a more expensive store. And she was upset about it. So those are the things, you know, you look back. It was just the, you know, money, 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 and the lack of money. And it created tension in the house. So that was number one. That shaped me and to a large degree shaped my political views. I think there are a lot of people in politics who don't understand what it means to live paycheck to paycheck. And half of the American people are doing that right now. And the second thing that shaped me as the son of an immigrant is the fact that my father came from Poland as a high school dropout, couldn't speak a word of English, had no money, and he fled both poverty in Poland as well as anti-Semitism. And the rest of the family that remained in Poland was wiped out by Hitler. And a few years ago, I think it was about 3 or 4 years ago now, my brother and I and our wives went back to the town in Poland, a little town outside of Krakow. And it was a very moving experience. But, you know, you quickly become immersed in politics when you understand that a politician elected in the early 30s by the German people, Nazi Party, was able to wipe out millions of Jews and others. So, you know, that the Holocaust had a profound impact on me as well.
And so I ask you now, actually, in this particular moment, and this is the dicey stuff, right? When, how do you feel about people drawing connections and saying, we have concentration camps in the United States of America? I mean, the other day on my Twitter, somebody said, we're not gassing people, but we're sending people back to their sure death. Or should we be making these connections or not?
Well, you know, I think the connections that you want to make is that we have a president who is playing on the most base instincts of people. In other words, humanity is in a lot of trouble, you know, And either we play to our angels and we try to bring people together and say, hey, the color of your skin is different than mine, so what? Your religion is different than mine, so what? Or else we say, oh my God, that person is a Muslim, that person is this, that person is that. We're supposed to hate those people. They're very different than ours, than we are. And you got a president who is quite intentionally trying to do that. And you see the cruelty.
So let's talk a little bit about immigration. You talk about comprehensive immigration reform. So lay it out for me. What's your vision?
What's my vision?
If you were president,
okay,
what would you do?
We would have a bill. We would work with members of Congress. And I kind of think, you know, I want everybody to know that, especially people in the immigrant community, Donald Trump does not speak for the American people. The majority of the American people understand that he is totally crazy when he talks about throwing millions of people out of this country, not only because that is disgusting and ugly unto itself, but it would happen to destroy the American economy if you did that. And what the American people want, you know, and there are nuanced differences, that's true. But what the American people say is we had 11 million undocumented people in this country, and we got to figure out a path toward comprehensive immigration reform, meaning a path toward citizenship. Exactly what does it look like? You don't have to argue about that one. But I think that is the goal. First of all, right now, I was in Los Angeles last month and talking to some teachers in schools where most of the kids are undocumented. And the teachers were telling me that these kids are living in trauma, living in incredible stress. Imagine worrying that when you came home from school, you know, there had been a raid from ICE or something like that, and that your parents were going to be deported. That's how people are living. So many people are living. So what we do is we have comprehensive immigration reform and a path towards citizenship. We appreciate the hard work and the taxes that so many people undocumented are paying in this country. On the first day, we can undo the damage that Trump did in terms of taking away the legal status of people in the DACA program, the 1.8 million people eligible. We expand DACA to cover parents as well. And then we develop a humane policy on the border, which certainly means you don't separate mothers and kids, and that you develop an asylum process which is based on international law and which expedites claims and not does what we're doing right now.
So would you call for a halt on all deportations, for example?
Except for those who maybe have criminal records. In general, yes.
But what kind of criminal records?
Serious. I mean, I don't mean by a traffic ticket.
But the problem, Senator Sanders, is that a lot of Democrats continue to have this kind of, well, we're only going to deport serious criminals. And frankly, that was what Obama was saying. That was what Bush was saying. But, you know, the agents on the ground are the ones. That's why I'm pressing on this question of would you be prepared to do a complete halt to all deportations, because it's just gotten so out of control that the only way to do this is to say, wait,
well,
stop.
We will have very different people in charge of Homeland Security and in charge of the appropriate agencies. These were people whose— You know, we will end— what I will tell you, Maria, is we will end the ICE raids, which are terrorizing so many communities around the country right now.
Would you— there is the notion of abolishing ICE. Do you think—
you could say abolish ICE, but you know what? So you can have another organization or agency that does exactly the same thing. So to me, it's not abolishing ICE, but it's abolishing what ICE is doing. So if you're asking me, will we stop those raids? We surely will. And we need major reform of the agencies and how they deal with the undocumented.
Okay. So what about saying the Department of Homeland Security was created out of what happened on September 11th?
Correct.
And
I voted against it, by the way, for a variety of reasons.
So would you be prepared to say we have to deconstruct the Department of Homeland Security?
Yes, that's fair. Reorganize it, deconstruct it, use whatever word you want. The answer is yes.
So recently, Senator Sanders, and I'm going to quote you, you said, in regards to open borders, you said, quote, if you simply open the borders, you'd have people from Vietnam and China and Mexico and Latin America coming in, and no one thinks that is a plausible approach. Can you talk to me a little bit more about that statement?
Sure. Look, we live now in a world of nation states. We live in the United States of America. North of us is Canada. South of us is Mexico, Latin America, Central America. And when you have, if you have nation states, and that's where we are right now, and I believe in a nation state. I believe in the United States of America. If you simply said that there are no borders, essentially, that anybody from China or Vietnam or any country around the world, Canada, any country around the world, wants to come in, you will likely have many, many people coming in. So I think what every country on earth does right now is they have rules regarding immigration. That's all that I'm saying. That's all. Canada does it. China does it. Mexico does it. Every country does. I mean, Canadians have a generous immigration policy, but the doors are not open to anybody at any time. I happen to think that the concept of a wall is stupid for a number of reasons. I think it's an ugly symbol to send to the world, and it's a very expensive way to protect the border.
Bernie, do you think that you're prepared to say, because one of the things that in my prep for the interview, I spoke to a lot of people kind of about Bernie, and it's like, look, when Bernie was out there in Vermont as the first socialist, you know, people were like, this was a phenomenon. This was a huge deal. And you focused on Vermont as a congressman, as a senator.
Well, that's my job.
That's your job. And so then the notion of some of the earlier positions you took on immigration, would you say that you have definitely learned, thought about some of the processes in which you've understood immigration and immigrant workers in the past? I mean, there have been people who have said,
you're talking, I should tell you, Marie, you're talking to somebody who, I don't know, 7-8 years ago, I think it was, went to Immokalee, Florida. You know what they grow in Immokalee?
Tomatoes.
That's right. And I worked with organizers there with some success. And we had a hearing in Washington to raise the wages of those undocumented workers who were really being exploited ruthlessly. And one of the issues that we don't talk about when we talk about immigrants is the degree to which employers take advantage of people who cannot complain that they're being paid less than the minimum wage, or that they have no health care, or that the housing that they have is inadequate, or that they're being exploited on the job. I would hope that I learn. I hope that I learn every day about immigration and about a lot of other things. And one of the issues that we're working on is trying to pass a Medicare for All single-payer system, which will guarantee health care to all people, including undocumented people.
In thinking about socialism regarding Latin America, Latinos in specifically, you know, in some ways, socialism in Latin America has kind of forced people out because they might have been killed, like in a dirty war in Argentina, just for being a socialist, or some may have been forced out by socialism in Latin America. Have you thought a lot about how that kind of plays
into— The answer is yes, I have. But to me, you know, when you're looking at the United States, which is a major, major and large industrialized society. When I talk about democratic socialism, I'm looking at the fact that in Scandinavia, public colleges are tuition-free. I'm looking at Canada, where everybody goes to the doctor or the hospital without paying a nickel out of their own pocket. I'm looking at Norway, where people, if you have a baby, you have a year off at, I think, 80% of your pay, and you have a wonderful child care system, which is very, very affordable. So to me, when I look at democratic socialism, I'm looking at what is going on in some of the wealthy, developed countries, which have done a much, much better job than the United States has in terms of protecting the needs of working families, the children, and the elderly.
So, Bernie, this is a question we're asking all the candidates. Why should Latinos and Latinas vote for you in particular?
Because most Latinos in this country are part of the working class of this nation. And you're looking at a candidate who has fought hard, A, to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour, and we're having some success around the country in doing that. Somebody who believes in equal pay for equal work, making sure that women, in the case of minority women, women of color, who are making 60 cents on the dollar compared to men, and we want to make sure that they get that whole damn dollar. Somebody who believes that health care is a human right, even for the undocumented, and is leading the effort on that. Somebody who knows that climate change is a great threat to the planet, but especially in the midst of that, a threat to lower-income people and people of color who are now dealing with environmental degradation. somebody who believes that public education should go through college. We should cancel all student debt, and that includes undocumented people. So I think if somebody takes a look at my record, as somebody who has stood up and fought for people who don't have a lot of power, for people who don't have a lot of money, I think they will find that I'm the candidate they may want to support.
Senator Sanders, good luck.
Thank you very much.
Bernie Sanders is a member of the U.S. Senate and is seeking the Democratic nomination for the President of the United States. And just a final note.
So we are going to end the ICE raids, which are terrorizing communities all across this country. We are going to impose a moratorium on deportations.
After our interview took place, Senator Sanders called for a moratorium on deportations in the United States. This episode was produced by Miguel Macias and edited by Fernanda Camarena. The Latino USA team includes Sofia Palizacá, Antonia Cerejido, Maggie Freeling, and Janice Yamoka, with help from Ginny Montalvo and Maya Cueva. Special thanks this week to Julio Ricardo Varela. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau and Julia Caruso. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholtz. Our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow is Fernanda Uriegas. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, be sure to stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, I'll see you on social media. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. The Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. And the Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at hsfoundation.org.
You have an action doll?
Yeah, we got underwear. I mean, listen.
Wait. Bernie, underwear what, for kids?
People do. When you run for president, a lot of crazy things happen.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, we break down the spell of Ima Sumac, the famous Peruvian diva, an Inca princess known as the Queen of Exotica. She's adored around the globe, but heavily criticized in her home country because of the stereotypes she portrayed. That's next time on Latino USA.